Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Best of Interviews on Sports Radio 94 WIP.
It is the WIP Afternoon Show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz. Joining us in studio, what a treat, from the Jordan Mailata Show, which is what everyone knows him from. That is Jordan Mailata. Get it?
From the Jordan Mailata Show. That was pretty funny.
6 o'clock Mondays at Chickies and Pete's, presented by Miller Lite. Thank you for coming in, Jordan. Appreciate that.
Thanks for having me.
Took some pictures earlier. How do you think Elliot and I did in the photo thing?
I think with a little bit of CGI, we can get the same height.
There you go. Yes.
I think no one's going to tell that we all have different heights.
The height issue, taking a picture with you.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of messed up.
Well, the problem is that anybody, you're a big guy, anybody standing next to you looks like a child.
So I'm just telling you guys to move up.
Well,
I did say, hey, move up and I'll stay back here. So it kind of looks like, you know, shoulder height wise, we're on the same level.
Nah, you wanted us to put on the helmets too. So you were okay with embarrassing us as well. So before we get into the football stuff, I was thinking this as you were walking around here at the station. Philadelphia is a psychotic sports town in a good way. Not just the fans, but us as well.
Mm-hmm.
So what is it like for you to be in the middle of, you're doing your job, but everybody in the city, to a certain extent, has an opinion on not just your job, but your teammates, that sort of thing. So, and we're obviously psychos here. So for you, how is it doing your job within the atmosphere of Philadelphia?
I just see myself as a middleman. That's all it is. To the fans, to the fan base, just to give them, everyone's going to have opinions. That is what comes with the platform, unfortunately. And so I just see this part right now, even sitting here talking to you guys, I'm just like the middleman, just trying to give answers to the questions the fans really want to know, but also protect the team at the same time. Not say too much.
Yeah.
Don't say too little, but just enough.
Well, do you have that calculation always going on in your head as to what the right amount is? You know, almost
sometimes.
Like a limiter to
sometimes.
Say,
we're
shouldn't
not
go
looking
there.
For anything, Jordan.
Yeah,
like, you know, we're just people talking.
Hey,
poor friends.
Come on now.
I will say you've done, and I've told you this before, but you've done a great job of being able to do that, of being able to have those conversations, answers. You know that there are people out here on this side that want to know what's going on. But at the same time, you have a trust and a bond with your brothers inside that building that you don't want to betray. But you feel like you have a responsibility as one of the vocal leaders of the team that you can express this. Now, everybody can't do that. Like, everybody can't – they don't have that ability to be able to articulate those things without putting their foot in their mouth. So we certainly appreciate that. That's why I think you've become one of the – when I say leaders of the team, faces of the team, I think of Jordan Mailata. I do. I mean, wow. Especially after last year. I do. I mean, that's what
–
it probably really started in 23.
Yeah, usually the media only wants to talk to me after we lose. You know, when we're winning, I never do interviews, right? And I'm always the first one. Hey,
right, yeah.
Hey, after a loss.
Because
hey.
They know. Because
you'll say something.
Yes.
Hey, but you ask the same questions, you get the same answers. You know?
Yeah. But I've never at least – I don't recall you ever throwing a teammate under the bus, throwing a coach under the bus. We've seen athletes when they're not in a good mood, things aren't going well with the team. They can snap back at the media or the fans, and there's a rift going there.
Yeah.
You've been able to balance that with being honest with us at times. But also, there's enough positivity built up there with you
yeah.
that I think people take your honesty, even if it's not something they want to hear, they hold on to it because they know it's coming from a good place.
Yeah.
Now, you listen, yeah, we've had athletes in town that some of them, they're pot stirrers. They like to go to the media, say stuff, and get things going. But I think with the way you've carried yourself all these years, I think you do it the right way.
I try my best.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's
not easy.
Best.
If you want to stir the pot.
Hey. You said truth teller. I'm a truther.
You are a truther.
I am a truther.
Yeah. You are a truther. Okay,
let's get down to it. So let me start it this way.
Yeah. Let me start this way. One of the big topics for us now we're discussing is what is wrong with the passing game? What's the why are we're not getting explosive plays? Mm-hmm. What's going on? It's not like I've stated, I don't think Jalen has played poorly. I just wonder if there's meat still left on the bone out there from you guys from an offensive standpoint in the passing game. When you look at the two games, can you explain as best you can about what do you think some of the issues are with the lack of explosiveness in the passing game?
I'm a truther. So I'm not going to sit here and tell you guys like I know the route tree and the concepts in the passing game. I'm not going to do that. Mm-hmm. Never have, never will. So let's get that out the way. I think, one, we could be better with our protection. We could be better at picking up the blitz, but also being on the same page with the running backs and the QB. And I think we have this is probably our best year that we've done it so far in the past two games. And knowing at Jalen, knowing where he's going to be hot. Mm-hmm. I think protection-wise, we could do that better. I think running the ball, we could do that better. We're not running the ball well. As well as we did or have in the past.
Right.
But then again, it's week two. We've only played two games. The sky is not falling.
Mm-hmm.
We're not worried about it. Not worried about it yet. I'll say it like that.
Yeah.
I get it, fans. You know, I get it. But we're not worried about it. You know, we know we left meat at the bone. We know that if our run game is solid, it opens up the play action and opens up the passing game. And our run game has been patchy. But that's stuff that we can't correct. I said it on my show. We're one block away. Yeah, you know, and that's just an execution. It's an execution error. And you know, and that's just something how we get better at it is we gotta keep working at it at practice.
Yeah.
As much as it sounds simple, that is the honest answer. Just working it at practice because we're one block away and it's just understanding your assignment, but then also how can you communicate so everyone is on the same page. I always talk about the communication aspect of the plays and how that is probably the major part about how the execution or the play, how the play turns out. And so those are just some areas.
Now, when you say communication, you mean like between you guys at the line. Talking about
just based off the call.
Okay.
You know, what's the call? Okay. How does that affect my technique?
Mm-hmm.
Who am I working with? You know, those kind of IDs.
Yeah.
So
it's it is a league of adjustments, right? And you guys won the Super Bowl last year and had a good offense. So every defensive coordinator in the league, when they're facing you, mm-hmm. you know, is trying to pick apart what you did to do something different to prevent you from doing it.
Yeah.
The Chiefs blitzed you guys a lot. You know, I guess I'm just trying to think of the chess game between the defense and what you are doing in terms of, are you determining what they do or are they determining what you do, that push and pull? Do you feel like that there were things you were doing last year that maybe other teams will be on to that you have to do differently?
Yes. Yes. We call it putting lipstick on the pig. You know, just dressing up the play a little bit. Just to kind of protect the integrity of it. But yeah, I think teams just play us different. I think, you know, not to brag or not to say anything about, you know, anything that may sound, you know, big headed or anything, but I think they play us differently because of our offensive line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because who we have at the running back position and who we have as a dual threat quarterback.
Yeah.
I think a lot of teams forget that Jalen Hurts can use his legs.
Yeah.
And we're pretty lucky to have that. Now, we could probably do more in the run game. You know, to alleviate some of that pressure, to remind people, you know, we have a QB who can use his legs.
Yeah.
Right, when he's not just scrambling out of the pocket on a pass play.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, as I said, the sky's not falling. Like, man, we got this. Like, I have total faith in our offense. and KP and everyone at our team. So
I think the thing that you said there I thought is interesting is there is a two things can exist at once. The sky's not falling also can be better. Right? It's two things at once, mm-hmm. which I think we don't always do a great job here of, you know, it's our job to make it feel, because, well, as a fan, sometimes when things aren't working the way that you want it to work, it feels like the sky is falling, right? And we don't know everything that you know, so.
It's a game of comparisons.
Yeah.
You're comparing yourself to other fan bases.
Yeah.
I understand that. I was a fan.
Yeah.
I am still a fan of, you know, many sports, so I get it.
This fan base is like no others.
Yeah.
It's a little different. We're a little different. It's okay to say.
Yes. Okay. Yes, you got me.
We're a little different. Yeah. And I don't know if that's always for the better or what, but I just know we're a little different. We certainly obsess over this team and everything, and having 6 days in between games to sort of break down everything and dissect everything from the game before, we contend, even in a win, we contend to find things to obsess about. And so we've been obsessing about the passing game for 2 weeks straight here, even though you guys are 2-0.
What about the tush push? Yeah.
Well, we talk about that too.
Well, hold on. That was coming up, yes.
Yeah.
You ever been obsessing about that?
All right, so let me ask you about the tush push thing. All right, I'm going to get to that. So you guys ran it 7 times Sunday. 7 times. It's a lot of talk
Might
on
work.
Seven times on it's on a lot of talk on national TV the last 2 days about it. And it's not all favorable.
Yeah.
Your thoughts on how it seems like there's a growing pushback from the national media against the tush push.
Yeah. I understand it. I understand the outrage. What I don't understand is them using it as an excuse to why we won the game.
Right.
I think it's incredibly disrespectful to our defense and our special teams who balled out. You know, my brother's on defense and special teams who balled out that game, who had our backs when we weren't moving the ball or we weren't doing anything. You know, and so when I see those things and they fly across my timeline here and there, and I do my best to stay off social media, but that kind of irks me a little bit. That pisses me off because we give so much to this game and to kind of base off a short yardage play that is a football play.
Yeah.
And say that we won the game off that, but not how our defense played, not how our special teams have played, putting us in those positions. You know, I think it's bull crap. Part of my French. Hey, let me press this dump button.
No, that one's fine.
Bullcrap is fine.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, that one's fine.
I was going to say a lot of other stuff, but I just think it's rubbish. It's absolute rubbish, man. It makes my blood boil just thinking about it. You know.
Now, do you guys? I wonder as a team, right? Particularly you guys as offensive linemen as a unit, because I feel like this is, along with Jalen, this is you all's thing. Like this is your thing, right? I wonder, do you feel like people will sort of label it like it's a crutch for you guys to lean on? Because I always look at it like it doesn't give you guys the credit for what you do as offensive linemen without it.
That's a great point.
That's how I kind of look at it.
That's a great point. I never thought about it like that. You know what? Because, you know, if everybody had us, they'd do it.
Right.
Of course. Why would they not do it?
So absolutely. I see it as a crutch.
Yeah.
But that's only because of the people we have in the room. If everybody could do it like us, they would. But they don't, because it starts up with the people up front and, of course, the pushes of the tush.
Yeah.
Well, you don't really get your tush pushed that much, though.
No. You know, sometimes.
You're on the edge. Sometimes. So, like, you're on the edge. You don't get as much tush pushed as, like, Cam.
That's because I'm underneath the pile with Landon.
That's true. And Landon got a lot of tush.
I'm
going to
let the people think that it's the pushes of tush that get the job done. I'm going to let them think that.
Do you get excited when the tush push is called, or are you like, oh, here we go?
How late in the game are we?
How many snaps have you had already?
How many snaps? No, it's kind of both, especially if it's like a got-to-have moment.
Yeah.
I feel like, you know, Sirianni does a great job of all these high football IQ situations that we go through in meetings. And so, like, you know, we do these situations every day, and you see the situation on the field and you're just like, yeah, this is got to have it, got to get it, got to do it.
And then the defense knows it's coming and they can't do anything about it.
That's my favorite part.
Sometimes, I'll even give this nugget. You know, sometimes if it's the first drive of the game and it's like 3rd and 1 and we call it, I'm just like,
it's going to be one of those days. Yeah. Yeah.
Like we're in the middle of the field. Yeah. Really?
Was it the Jacksonville game last year? I feel like there was one game where there were more tush pushes than any other game. Maybe it was a Jacksonville. Maybe it was a Jacksonville game.
I was on the sideline for that one. Sorry, guys.
Oh, come on.
Were you out that game?
I was out that game.
Oh.
Fred Johnson did a phenomenal job.
Oh, yeah.
The
I forgot about that.
You know, speaking of being out, we were talking about Jordan Davis, and the question is not specifically about Jordan Davis. Just I guess it's more about staying in the condition, the balance between rest and recovery, and keeping your conditioning up during the season. Mm-hmm. Off season's easier, right? Because you don't have games, whatever. So what is how do you balance that? How do you balance the recovery from the game on Sunday, which beat the crap out of you, and then you know you need to stay in shape to be able to play again? How do you do that?
So Sirianni does a great job of, you know, building the schedule out. So post practice, there's nothing. There's no time for meetings. It's your time to do recovery, rest, or conditioning. And so that is, you know, pretty much the time that we get to do the all three. We don't have anything else. We get done at like 4:30, I guess. Something like that. And then, the rest of the night off to do rest, recover, or conditioning.
And nutrition. Nutrition's super important, I would imagine, during the season as well.
Yes. The Eagles do a great job. Our team of chefs at the facility do a great job of feeding us. And, you know, I guess, you know, Steph, our nutritionist, does a great job of making sure that the players are in their range. So,
dude, if I was a young player, seriously, this is off topic. If I was a rookie, first of all, to move somewhere close to the facility.
So you can eat every meal.
Man, I'm eating every meal over there.
they are doing that.
Right? Yeah, the rookies, man, that is awesome.
Oh, you get kidding
a,
me?
Dude, let me tell you, you don't even want to know how I was eating as a rookie, man. It was ridiculous. MREs? Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of fast food, a lot of whatever you can get, or you know what I mean? Like, rarely cooked meals.
In T.O.'s book, I think he said for the first season he ate McDonald's every meal.
I can believe that.
Terrell Owens did.
Yeah. McDonald's every meal?
Yes, it's rookie season. Yeah.
I mean, bag of bones, mate.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, I wish I could do that too.
Yeah,
if I was a bag of bones, I would eat McDonald's.
Yeah,
as well.
Right,
sorry,
right,
sorry,
right.
Sorry,
I know what you're saying. Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Like, yeah, I don't have to necessarily watch my weight.
Yes, shotgun. I'm just comparing the body type. Less. That's all it was.
No, you look good, brother. You look good. Looking good.
Oh yeah, come on, man.
The Italian shirt, you know.
Oh man, it fits well, man.
Yeah. So we were talking about the Phillies earlier, and the Phillies won the NL East yesterday. Mm. Now, not a playoff win, but
clinched
the division. Yeah. And I wonder if you had seen the celebrations that they did. Now, if you hadn't, they covered the entire clubhouse with plastic, popping champagnes, doing beer funnels, all that sort of stuff, just because they won the division. If you had seen it, and what you think of the celebration.
Dude, that's like rugby locker room celebrations, man.
Yeah, they go hard.
But that's after you win the championship or?
Would never see. That's just winning a game on the weekend. that's every game after every game. Man, would love to see that in the NFL.
Yeah, you want to do
it? Would love to see that. I saw it.
Yeah.
I saw it.
Yeah.
It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie to you. They was cool.
They have a good time. They have a good time.
Yeah. I'd have a great time, too, if I plastic wrap the rest of the locker room.
You have to see, you know what training camp is like for you. You have to see what spring training is like for players. It is.
Oh, you'd be amazed by it.
Nah, stop.
Well, it's just.
What are we talking to here?
They're just hanging out. I mean.
Oh, man.
They're done at 10, ready to play golf by 12, Jordan.
What kind of conditioning are they doing? I need to know that. That's what I need to find out.
They literally spent that hour stretching and just like playing toss with each other.
That just pisses me off.
Yeah.
I hate that you guys just brought this up. That pisses me off.
Maybe they run a few sprints. Nobody's making them run the sprints. They're just doing it to show that they're doing something.
Yeah, that really angrifies me.
Yeah. Hold on. You got to do a little
bit of angrify. That's a nice
You
got
to do some PFP work, you know, pitcher's fielding practice.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Work on running over to first base.
And practice.
Yes.
Yeah.
Are they drinking while they're doing this?
Yeah, they may as well be.
They could, yeah. I'm telling you, if you saw...
I'm in the wrong spot.
Yeah.
Golly.
I was going to say, if you saw Philly spring training, I have no doubt you would start learning how to hit.
Start learning how to hit, for sure.
I don't know, man.
Sure.
I don't know if I can hit a ball.
Well,
the hardest thing to do.
Have you seen our little batting cage practice whenever we go?
Yeah. I've seen you guys. Do you ever go up and play in Smitty's softball thing?
No. Usually away, traveling.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
You got too big a strike zone for baseball, honestly. You're too tall. You know?
Supposed to be your chest to your
knees. That's like 5 feet on you.
I'm screwed.
Yeah. You're in real trouble.
I'm screwed.
So, big game on Sunday. Rams, here it is. It's sort of a gauntlet at the beginning of this season. You know, Cowboys, Chiefs.
No let up.
Rams, Bucks, then the Broncos. Mm-hmm. All good teams.
We're playing the Broncos?
Yeah.
I didn't even know that.
Hey. Tough defense.
What?
That's 3-4 weeks ago.
This is the thing.
Yeah.
Like, I actually don't know who we're playing.
I believe you.
And like, if it wasn't for Spike, I wouldn't know. And it's just from the shows that we've been doing. He's like,
I'm here for you, man.
You know, I just don't know who we're playing.
Yeah, you're just next opponent. Next up. Who's next?
I think this year I just kind of went into the mindset like, we'll see who we see.
Yeah.
Worry about it that week. You were saying the gauntlet?
Well, must be better at home. You know, no travel day in there. So the week goes, so off yesterday, right? And then today.
Oh, today off.
Today off. And
in
then.
Yesterday.
In yesterday, and then practice starts again tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And start game planning for the Rams, or yesterday you were looking at tape of the Chiefs game, and then starting tomorrow starts Rams prep. Is that how it works?
Yeah. I'm not giving away the secrets of
Here we go. Is there anywhere else you'd rather spend your off day?
The WIP.
The WIP. There are things that I could be doing, but...
I'll give you credit. You've been hanging around today, man.
Yeah.
We appreciate it.
Well,
and you can always tell because it's a little more.
I was just.
It's a little more of a buzz in the building.
Yeah. Oh,
I was just trying to find my office here. You know,
they need to have one for you.
That was the final question. You know, so you finished up your lunch around 3:30, and then program director, brand manager Rod Lakin had to entertain you for about a half hour to this. Rod is a great guy and a great program director. Mm-hmm. Entertaining. I don't know if I would put that on his. So was he able to keep you busy?
No, I heard Jordan was entertaining them.
It
makes way more sense.
To be fair, I was entertaining myself, which meant that I was entertaining.
There you go. All right.
But he did a great job.
How far do you think you could throw Steinbrenner?
How about this? They let Jordan take the guitars off the wall and play them.
How far do you think I could throw Steinberg?
Far do you think you could throw Steinberg?
So for anyone listening, Steinberg's a small guy. Do you think you could throw him 10 feet?
I will not be Stein throwing anybody.
Stein throwing.
That is, you can't do my boy like that.
You guys, let me tell you, I know it's a long way away. You guys win the Super Bowl, the final Jordan Mailata show of the year. We're throwing Steiny. We're throwing Steiny. Yeah.
Holy cow, can't do it, Steiny. Just can't do it, Steiny.
All right, Jordan. Well, we appreciate you coming in,
appreciate
brother.
Appreciate you hanging out, brother.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
And
excited everybody around the building today.
And, you know, dealing with us at WIP. It takes...
Not that bad.
Well, a lot of people, you know, if I was in Jordan's job, I would, first of all, have to be in way better shape and be much bigger. But the other thing is, I would tune us out completely. You being part of it means a lot to the listeners, means a lot to us.
I just feel like I'm the whip whisperer, you know?
Yeah.
Whisperer.
Hold on. They call us the whip down there.
Where? We're down there.
At the NovaCare.
Yeah, we heard AJ call us whip once.
Well, I just was reading the sign.
Yeah, there you go.
VIP whisperer just was too long.
Yeah, there you go.
So we're the whisperer.
I got you.
Had more of a ring to it as I was saying it in my head.
All right.
Makes sense.
Well, knock them dead on Sunday, and then I'll see you on Monday, and appreciate I'll tell you who you're playing the next week.
Appreciate it.
I feel like I'm a little bit of a coach. I'm a little bit of a coach.
Let's talk some football with our next guest. Love having Jaws on the program, normally Tuesdays, but Jaws today with us on a Wednesday midweek. A little bit of Eagles Chiefs, a lot of bit of Eagles Rams, and the great Ron Jaworski right now. Good morning, Jaws.
Good morning, Joe and guys. Always good to be with you. Thank you very much for adjusting your schedule. I got a busy travel week, and I'm glad we're able to get in here. I love talking to you guys.
For sure. Our pleasure, Jaws. So let's start Tush Push. Look, Jaws, we all know people in and around the NFL. We all have friends. We all talk football. But there's nobody around here, nobody, that knows more people connected to the National Football League than you. I can't imagine how many people you know text you and call you about the Tush Push.
How much time do you have?
Right. So people are out of their minds with aggravation, obviously. Let's start with this. Are you still with me that you're personally against the Tush Push, even though the Eagles succeed? I know most people around here don't think it and don't say it, but I remain thinking it shouldn't be allowed to be pushed. Where do you personally come down on it?
Well, I originally was against the Tush Push for this reason. It wasn't that I didn't think it was effective play, because it obviously is.
Yeah.
I was concerned about the safety factor. And I wanted to see maybe a season go by or two seasons go by to see exactly if injuries are being caused by the Tush Push. That was kind of a position the league took as well. They wanted to, before they made a decision on it or put it to a vote, they wanted to let it play out to see if it was a formation. And in fact, we got 22 guys jumping on each other. Someone could get hurt. But the studies have shown that it is not hazardous by running the Tush Push. So I kind of wavered in front of, okay, we can do it, try stopping it, and no one can stop it. So I've changed my opinion on it, and it's a football play now.
Interesting. Charles, so we were talking earlier, and I had written down five reasons why I think it succeeds with the Eagles and not other teams. And I'm curious which you think is the most important. Hurts' power and instincts, the success of Mulata, Dickerson, and Juergens, both their power and instincts, Stoutland as a coach and teacher, the fact that they've mastered practicing it, which many teams don't even try, and then, of course, the actual push itself, which I might put fifth on the list, which is ironic, but you do get that assist typically from a tight end and a running back. Which do you think is the most important?
All the above. I'm not waffling on it. There are different ways that they run it. There are times when he will sneak over Juergens and the guys and go left or go right. There are times he will bounce to the outside. That's where Jalen becomes the most important guy because of his length strength. But I think there are different ways they run the Tush Push, depending on how the defense lines up. Everyone seems to be trying now to get under the offensive line. That has not worked. It didn't work last year. It's obviously not worked. Didn't work last week. So you'll see something different. We saw the leapers in a playoff game against Washington. Everyone tried to do the leaper. That didn't work. Going low didn't work. Going outside didn't work. And I'll guarantee you, there's a gimmick and there's a gadget coming. I don't know when it will come this week, but I know they have gimmicks and gadgets off the Tush Push.
Yeah, for sure.
There's lots of concern from Joe, especially with week two, the offense not looking quite as explosive as any of us hoped. That's for sure. But how worried are you that the offense is not getting chunk plays at this point? We were told that the training camp is not really like we grew accustomed to what it was supposed to be, which is getting guys ready to play football. So now the first month of the regular season, I'm supposed to hold back my judgment to some degree. How much are you able to do that?
Yeah, I am a little concerned about this, the explosive plays. Now, obviously, we got an explosive play to Smitty that kind of sealed the game on a zero coverage blitz. And of course, Jalen made the right read and threw a jump ball, and Smitty came up with the catch. That was a big play. But what kind of concerns me, and when I look at the tape, what are teams doing? What are they doing? Not what I think, what are they doing? So, in effect, what do they think of this offense? What do they think of the concepts? And I was actually, after going through the tape, they blitz Jalen almost 60% of the time. 60%. I can't research all his career, but I think that might be the most I've seen them blitz Jalen Hurts in a game, any team.
Wow.
And the Chiefs are very creative. You know, Spagnuolo is one of the best in the business of his creativity. It almost shows, to me, a little disrespect. That, yeah. Okay, hey, we're bringing everybody. John, you know, when you bring everybody, those guys on the outside are on an island. And we really didn't take advantage of that. So I think we're going to see more of that. But it's kind of just something to watch, in my opinion, because we didn't beat it enough. They came with more of it. So now it's the receivers. It's the offensive line and pickup. It's the backs and pickup. And it's the quarterback. And you know, quite honestly, I thought Jalen, for the first time I've seen in a while, didn't feel comfortable against the blitzes. There were some open receivers. He had some opportunities to get the ball to AJ. He did not. It just wasn't one of his sharpest games, both mentally and physically.
And a lot of that credit goes to Steve Spagnuolo for throwing all sorts of looks at him.
I agree 100% with that. But your receivers must win, and they must win quick. They must give the quarterback definition because you don't have time when the zero blitz is coming. You don't have time when an unblocked defender is coming. So the wide receiver has to make the adjustment. You can't run 20-yard routes when the guys are running free your quarterback.
So, Jaws, how much of that is the offense was designed in a way that the receivers are still running with their, you know, their head downfield instead of looking for the football when it's a blitz? How much of that is, you know, faultily designed offense? How much of that is the guys in the game making the mistake of not cutting their routes off?
Every offense has built-in side adjust to blitzes. So that's wide receivers. There's always a built-in because the quarterback can't drop back 7 steps, stand there, throw the football, and get 3.1 seconds to throw the football. One, you're getting a zero coverage. So receivers must break off their routes. So, you know, it's a combination. I think Jalen's got to see it quicker, and the receivers must make side adjustments.
Mm-hmm. Ron Jaworski with us here. Jaws, let's talk Eagles-Rams a little bit. Great game last year. Are the Rams – okay, you said before the season, Bucs second best in the NFC. Bucs are 2-0, Eagles are 2-0, Rams are 2-0, Packers are 2-0. Are the Packers the bigger threat or the Rams the bigger threat? Or the Bucs the bigger threat?
Yeah, after watching that Bucs game the other night, golly, what a one of the best 2-minute drives I've ever seen. You know, Baker Mayfield, they're playing good football.
He's pretty good.
It's hard to assess after two games. I'd feel more comfortable with like four games and it was playing out like this.
But you think they're the teams? I mean, they're the squads this year to be aware of?
I think their fan base certainly does, just like we think we're the best team. And I would still hang my hat on the Eagles right now. But this is going to be a good test. You think of that Rams playoff game last year. They were Jalen Carter sack away from potentially losing that game. You know, Higbee's running a little stick, not go, going to get the ball around the goal line. He's going to score, and we're going to be behind in the last minute of the game. Jalen Carter makes a sack on Stafford, and all of a sudden, you know, we win the football game. But it was a damn dogfight last year. It's going to be a dogfight. The Rams are a much better team right now. You know, Devontae Adams on that team gives them two real big go-to receivers. It's going to be. I'm looking forward to the game. It's going to be a really, really good litmus test of where the Eagles are this season.
So, Jaws, do we have the DBs to be able to hang with Devontae Adams and Puka Nacua? I mean, essentially, I like our young guys. I like Quinyon. I like I like the guys we brought in recently. But then on the other side of things, with the Dory Jackson. If they somehow get a Dory on Devontae Adams or Puka Nacua, is it all over for us?
Well, it won't be all over, but it's going to be a challenge. It's going to be they're going to have to mask at deficiency right now. You know, Dory just hasn't stepped up, and let's be realistic now. The Chiefs were without Rice and Worthy in that game. They had, you know, Juju Schuster-Smith's not going to beat you, and he didn't. But, you know, if teams get their number one, number two receivers back through the Chiefs, it's going to be a different ballgame, I think. The Rams are a lethal team. Matthew Stafford's one of the premier quarterbacks in this game. They're a damn good football team.
Yeah. Ron Jaworski here. They really are. Charles,
by the way, I didn't probably answer the question, but this is a young, talented defense. And young is the thing that bothers me. Talented, that's eventually going to come to the forefront. Young players make mistakes. And that's what concerns me. It is a young team. This is going to be a dominant defense. I mean, this team is really, really loaded with talent on the defensive side of football. I thought Vic did a really good job last week with his blitzes against Patrick Mahomes. He did a really good job. Some new designer blitzes that I haven't seen from a Vic Fangio defense since he's been in Philly. So Vic is kind of picking up his tempo with the blitzes as well. But I think this defense can be really good. I hope someone steps to the forefront as far as leadership goes. There's always a guy in defense that every team that has a great defense has one or two guys just step up at big times. I'm not sure who that guy is in this Eagle defense right now. They're guys playing good football, but I don't see that leadership that I think is necessary to repeat as a Super Bowl champion.
What's the biggest challenge for Vic Fangio going up against Sean McVay? You know, Sean McVay being an offensively minded guy, what does Vic Fangio have to confront first and foremost to stop McVay's offense?
He likes to rent space in your mind is a term I like to use. You'll get a lot of formation.
He wants
to force mental mistakes. You know, that's what he wants to do. A lot of motion, a lot of movement, a lot of formation variation. You'll see a lot of garbage, a lot of junk.
Yeah.
You know, and basically, he's running basic plays, but they're masked with, you know, all the window dressing.
See, I really like – I do think this comes from the line of thinking, like the Gruden line of thinking. Mm-hmm. Remember, this Sean McVay was, like, trained under John Gruden, and John Gruden used to tell us – he loved plays that start out looking the same and then they end up different. And that really does make it hard for anyone. It makes it hard on both sides of the football when you got stuff that clutters your mind up. I think McVay does it as good as anyone. Like what we're talking about.
Look, he's a great coach.
Here,
I mean,
disguise,
no question.
Motion,
yeah. He's a great coach.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got weapons, and he's got weapons now, too. And they can run the football, and their offensive line is better. So
That's the thing. Are they going to run the football? That's the thing. It seems like he tends to go through phases, McVay does, where he'll stick to it, and then he won't. We know that running the ball is important. How good is their run game?
I think it's yet to be determined, but it is a good shot. They've shown they can run the football. But, you know, McVay, like a lot of these designer of offenses, they sometimes just can't stay to the basics. They got to show how good they are. They got to show how creative they are. And it happens to a lot of guys. You know, we mentioned that Tampa game the other night, and I was kind of pleasantly surprised. I saw how Tampa kind of stuck to their running game when they weren't really being a drop for a while, you know, and they stuck with it. And eventually they softened up the defense. So although the running game may not be big in numbers, it certainly sends a message to the defense that you can't disrespect the ability to run the football.
Yeah. Jaws, final thing, Eagles aside,
sure.
Biggest NFL storyline so far. We've had 2 weeks. What do you think is rattling through people's minds in the nation the most about football so far?
Yeah, I think number one, probably the Packers look like the best team right now. And after the Micah Parsons trade, I think I see now why the Packers made the deal that they made. They felt they were that one edge pass rusher away, that one really great defense player way of being a quality football team. Right now, I think they're the best team in the league.
Wow, that's a statement. Jaws, stay well,
my
man.
Long way to go. Long way to go.
Sure.
I like our birds.
Eagles were not the best team in the league in week 2 last year.
They were not. Then again, James, they don't always win 77 games
either.
In a row. You know, I mean,
Jalen, they do a lot, though.
James holds on to, because it happened last year, it'll happen again.
No. My thing is that we can't judge it in the first month of the season. Let's remember last year when we judged in the first month of the season and ended up looking like idiots because they were the best team we'd ever seen.
Well,
I agree with James.
I'm going to cut that audio.
But they were really good. Hey, Jaws.
So this is what we do. Instant analysis.
I know.
That's what we do.
I know. Jaws, stay well, my man. We'll talk.
Thanks, Jaws.
All right.
Thanks, Jaws.
Thanks, guys.
You got it, buddy.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, 2-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It is the WIP Afternoon Show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz every Thursday at 4 o'clock. We are joined by the great Mike Mayock. You can hear him on the Believe in Eagles podcast with Lee Mayock. Mayock, thanks for joining us, man.
I appreciate it. How you guys doing?
Doing pretty good,
What's
man.
What's up, Mike?
Doing pretty good. So, Eagles 2-0. We will get to the Rams game second, if you're okay with that. I want to talk about the Chiefs game first. So, yeah. Big win in Kansas City. What we have been talking about, aside from the big win most of the week, is the offense. I think the passing game headlines it, but I also think the rushing game has not been at least what we have been used to with Saquon here. So from an offensive perspective, what did you see on Sunday?
Yeah, and you know, I was driving around yesterday. I caught you guys for about 20 minutes. And I'm not going to lie, I was a little frustrated by some negativity, especially towards the quarterback.
And all right.
Spike, I think you're really good at callers, at making them, you know, calling them out to make sure that they answer your questions, and you're very good with that. And I kind of feel the same way, like, okay, so my biggest problem with their offense the other day was that Spagnuolo ran 7-0 blitzes at him, which is crazy.
Yep.
And people that don't know what a zero blitz is, it means they're bringing one more defender on a blitz than you can block. So by definition, there's going to be a free runner, and your wideouts ought to win. Okay? They're 1-on-1 with no help. So they did it 7 times, and the first 6 times were 3 incompletions and then 3 completions totaling 18 yards. Which is really not, it's bad. Okay? If they're going to zero blitz you got to make them pay. As a former defensive back, I hated zero blitz. Okay? You got to make them pay offensively if teams are going to zero blitz you. And the Eagles didn't do it until play number 7, which was the big throw down the field to Devontae Smith to the 4-yard line that ultimately set up the winning touchdown, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the production was awful, and I get frustrated about that, but I also know it's going to get better. And I also, when you watch the tape, like to give you like the Jalen Hurts stuff, I get frustrated because you watch the tape and, you know, I don't think you saw what happened with the Eagles pass protection on those 7-0 blitzes. I didn't know it until I saw it. And like on one play, Saquon Barkley missed 2 guys in the A-gap. I mean, he in the center. I mean, 2 guys in the A-gap came through untouched in addition to the free runner outside, okay? On another pass protection, one of the tackles stepped out and blocked the defensive end instead of the safety to his inside gap. And my point is, I don't want to get overly technical, but there are so many things going on, right? To be sitting there and calling out Jalen Hurts when all he's done is take you to 2 Super Bowls in the last 3 years, win the first 2 games of your season, you know, Dallas and at Kansas City, has it been pretty? No. And I know you're frustrated by it because it doesn't look right, and you want the Eagles to get better as the season goes on. But all I'm trying to say is, man, I know how hard it is to win in this league. Ike knows how hard it is to win in this freaking league, man. And it might be ugly, but they're 2-0, and give them a chance to work into their new offensive coordinator. The differences in their offensive line. Get comfortable with what they can do. And ultimately, if somebody wants to run 7-0s at you, you got to be run. I mean, you got 2 of the best wideouts in the league, and you got to use them to take advantage and win. But you also have to pass protect properly also. So I'm just kind of using that as an example of, I feel like you guys are all over Jalen, and the kid is, he's a Super Bowl winning quarterback. I mean, I don't get the criticism, to be honest.
Okay, so all fair points. Let me push back here. So you're right. For every single play, I did not go back and watch the way that you did on every single play. However, and Jalen Hurts did win the Super Bowl, and there are plenty of great things about Jalen Hurts. However, I will present this to you. Every year since 2022, they have passed for fewer yards than they have the year before. The last 3 years, they have had 3 separate offensive coordinators. their pass game in 2023 was littered with turnovers. And one of the criticisms was that the pass game and the offense was too simple and was the other teams were figuring it out, and that's why it wasn't working. In 2024, there were specific articles, especially after the bye week, that they simplified the offense and they just concentrated on the players that they had. But once again, the pass game took a step back. He didn't turn the ball over, but they were 29th in the league in passing. This year, again, just trend-wise, another new offensive coordinator. Again, the criticism is that A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith, once again, not involved in the offense, with a different offensive coordinator, with, again, similar criticisms. So what that says to me is there are two constants over those 3 years, Jalen Hurts and Nick Sirianni. So if it is an issue that the pass game is getting worse, and you're right, they have a ton of talent, but part of that talent is supposed to be the guy who is under center, who is being paid $55 million a year. So we have A.J. Brown, who's super talented, Devontae Smith, who is super talented, Dallas Goedert was not there on Sunday, super talented, Saquon Barkley, offensive line, all of those things. Are they all going to be perfect every time? Absolutely not. Are there going to be stinkers in there? Absolutely. Did they win the Super Bowl? Yes. But when we're trying to diagnose what is going on here, and when we have the only quarterback in the NFL who hasn't thrown a touchdown pass, the only one, what's his name? The backup that they just drafted in Cleveland. Dylan Gabriel has a touchdown pass. All those things, if you look at it and you say, we have the most talented offense in all of football. All of football, and we can't figure out a way to have a dynamic passing game. Now, people will point to the NFC Championship game and the Super Bowl, which were great, absolutely big games. But if there isn't a way to replicate that regularly, I think you have to look and say, why is that? So that is the perspective that I'm coming from. It is more big picture than it is about Sunday's game.
And I look at it, I think you provided a couple of the answers to the audience, but you took the negative side of it. I look at it like, hey, three coordinators in 3 years, it takes a while to get through your process and your identity. Like last year, they were 2-2 when they went to their bye week, and I didn't know who they were offensively. And to be really honest with you, I don't know who they are this year. Okay? The common denominator there is new coordinators each year. All right? And you're right. He had too many turnovers in 23, and I think that's why he was risk-averse last year. And I told you guys several times, I watched enough tape to see where I just wanted him to rip it and give 6 and 11 chances to make plays. Okay? I told you that last year. And then when they got in the playoffs in the Super Bowl, he did that. Ball came out early. He gave them chances to make plays, and they did. Now, you saddle him with the third offensive coordinator in 3 years, and if you go back to college, he's got about 7 and 8 years. I mean, every year this kid has got to learn a new offense with different nuance.
But it's not a new offense. I mean, here is what I see. Hold on, Mike. It is three offensive coordinators in 3 years, for sure. But you can look around the league. Baker Mayfield's had three offensive coordinators in 3 years. Daniel Jones is with a different offensive coordinator, a different head coach, and a completely different team and is functional. The Philadelphia Eagles are returning 9 of 11 starters on offense, I believe, including all the skill players. And their offensive coordinator has been the pass game coordinator for the Eagles for 3 years. So, yes, it's new, but it's not that new.
But I guess my point, the bigger picture, okay, you want to talk bigger picture, is that you want to point at the $55 million guy when there's an awful lot of moving parts to this right now. One of them is the coordinator who's going to put his own patent on this offense. Is it Nick's ultimately? Sure. But each guy's a little different, okay? There's different nuances to what they're trying to work through. So at the end of the day, you got to look at it and say, okay, it's a different OC. Okay, we got to work through that process. Number two, how's the offensive line playing? I'm a Stoutland guy. Always have been. Love Stout. But I thought they played below average last week. I think the left guard is hurt and not playing up to his capabilities. I think they're having some issues up front with communication. And at the end of the day, we lump it all into the Jalen puddle. It's all Jalen's fault.
I don't think that's what everybody is saying. Now, maybe that's what you heard in the 20 minutes. We've heard on the radio stations, there's been plenty of Kevin Pitullo. We had several callers talking about Nick Sirianni as well. I think, you know, when you said, and this is why he gets a lot of the blame, right? You said to me, all the kid's done is take the team to two Super Bowls and win one. Well, okay, so all that one player has done, you're giving him credit for going to two Super Bowls and winning one, yet everybody else is the problem when it goes wrong. You know, he's the quarterback. So if he's going to get all the credit and he's going to be the Super Bowl MVP and he's going to be the face of the team and we're going to give him credit when things go well and when they win games, which, by the way, we had the best player in the league in Saquon Barkley last year. We had the number one team in the defense in the league last year. And what you just said to me was, Jalen Hurts took them to win a Super Bowl. So what I'm going to tell you is, just one more second. What I'm going to tell you is, if you're going to tell me that Jalen Hurts took them to win a Super Bowl last year, I'm going to tell you that Jalen Hurts is the quarterback of this offense that has not looked good this year.
He's the leader of that team. And generically, we all talk about quarterbacks, whether they take their teams to the playoffs. I didn't mean it specifically. Okay, at the end of the day, we all know that the Eagles are set up a little bit differently than most teams. And what does that mean? You've already told me about all the talent. Okay, so the kid has to step up when he needs to, and in the biggest moments he has.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm really saying at the end of the day is give the guy an opportunity to work through what they're working through, because it's O-line. Let me tell you, here's one thing, okay? Like the first play of the game, and I don't know if you guys saw it or
we did.
Yep, I know you.
We did.
Yep, we seen it.
It was dialed up for a shot to A.J. Brown, right?
Yep.
And A.J. Brown was open.
Yep.
And they max protected, play action, and Kansas City ran a corner blitz, and both tight ends missed the block. Both of them on one corner. 81 was late getting out of his block, and 83 couldn't get there in time coming across. So the tight ends went 0-for-2 when that should have been a 70-yard touchdown. How different would the conversation be if play number one had been blocked correctly and they go 70 to AJ to kick that game off?
Yeah, but how different would the conversation be with that pass that you're talking about to Devontae Smith that by the way, was an outrageous play by Devontae Smith? Like, how different are we talking about the game if Devontae Smith doesn't go back and get that pass? We can do all day, you know, this play happened, this play didn't happen, whose fault was this, whose fault was that? But I think big picture, like you said, the praise and the criticism is always going to come back on the head coach and the quarterback.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Ike.
Go ahead, Ike.
Yeah. I was going to jump in here for a second, Mike, because here's the thing I'm looking for. I guess, reason to continue to believe that it's going to get better. Let me ask you this, Mike, in watching it. Do you think they're close to the passing game sort of being more effective? And do you believe they need to be better in the passing game? I know they're 2-0 right now, and they've done what they needed to do to win games. And winning games early in the season when people are still trying to get their footing is most important. But when you get to the middle of the season in November and December, I feel like you need to be at your best. So one of the things I'm wondering is, can we win like this, throwing 100, 125 yards a game? Or do you believe there's plays there that they're one or two blocks or what have you away from connecting on those things? Do you feel like they will get better in this area?
What I think my point is, and maybe I haven't made it well, is that I think they've earned the right to work their way into this thing. And like last year, when they were 2-2, they ended up winning a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
This year, they're 2-0. And am I happy with the pass game? No. I think you probably could tell by the way I just talked about zero coverage.
Right.
I think you got to have a dagger and go attack the defense with two of the best wideouts in football. Okay?
Yeah.
However, I believe that they're going to figure that out and a way to pass protect it, to give them time to do that,
okay,
and all the other things that go into that. Do I think it's going to take some time, Mike? I do. Okay? Do I love the pass game today? No. But it's hand-in-hand with a run game.
Mm-hmm.
You guys are frustrated with the run game. And, you know, he went 22 for 88, I think, 4 yards You know, he isn't running any differently than he did last year. Okay? And at the end of the day, again, I think game plan and who you're playing as they go forward, they have to get better. If they don't get better, it's not playoffs and it's not Super Bowl. Like, I'm not trying to sugarcoat it
right.
at all.
Mm-hmm.
My whole thing is give them time to figure it out and get there because the execution is not good today offensively.
No, listen, that's why we love having you. That's why we love having you. We know you're going to go comb through the tape. You're going to see things that we don't see and be able to provide that information. So I'm good with that. I think when this thing with the radio, right, we discuss this every day, and I think and I'm not faulting you or what have you, because when you catch the show, whenever you catch it, you're catching the conversation wherever
right.
it's at.
Right.
And so I totally understand that. I think the large portion of the week has been trying to figure out why it's this way. Will it get better? Who's at fault for why it's this way? The OC, is it the quarterback? And it's when we do this every day, it becomes a little repetitive, I believe, for a lot of people. But I don't know. Spike is a little more critical, and I understand where he's coming from. But I think the large majority of people just feel like it needs to get better. They're happy that the team is 2-0, but they feel like, man, can we win like this if we play like this all year long? You know what I'm saying? Like, you almost had that feeling of we're not dominating a team, we're getting by.
Right. And everything you said, I agree with. What I'm trying to say is really just having been with the Raiders
mm-hmm.
gave me a different perspective than just a quote media guy.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I played in the NFL. I wasn't
yes.
good, but I was a player too.
Yep.
So it made me realize how hard it is to win in this friggin' league. Okay. And that it is a process. And that if you don't come out week one and two killing it, like the Eagles a year ago, going into bye week,
mm-hmm.
you know, people are going to lose their jobs and players aren't going to get extended. Bad things happen as a consequence. All I'm saying is I trust that they're going to get it right over time.
Yeah.
Will it be quick? I don't think so. I think there's a lot of work to do, especially in the pass game. But I think they got to trust those two wideouts, and they got to throw the ball to them even when they look like they're covered, especially when it's press coverage and you get a defensive back's back turned to the line of scrimmage.
Okay.
And that's what they did on that last one. So, you know, to a degree, Spike, I'm agreeing with you. It has
sure.
to get better. It has to get better or it's not going to be good. But all I'm saying is, man, if these guys haven't earned your trust and confidence, who the hell ever will?
Well, that's the thing with Spike, Mike. Are you kidding me? Earning his trust and confidence, that's probably one of the hardest things to do around here.
Yeah, I don't trust that.
But Joel Embiid's going to be great this year.
No,
I have a 6 second.
Stop that. I think overall is if it hadn't been things, the thing that you just said, right, is the, and Ike's right. And by the way, it's not just the Eagles, it's every team. It's how I am. But the thing that you just said, that I think that, yes, they have earned as an organization the trust that they'll get it right.
Yeah.
For sure, in one way or another,
yes.
Sure. But the other thing that comes into my mind is when you said, okay, they have to throw it to those guys whether they're open or not. Or,
yep.
you know what, but if I hadn't heard that same exact thing for 17 games last year, you know, with a few exceptions, I think I would be more willing to think this is going to work its way out. But truthfully, it was most of the year last year until those final two games. So I think the bigger concern is if these were things we hadn't seen before, oh, that's a different problem. We didn't expect, but they are similar issues. He was hesitant to pull the trigger on those plays last year too. So that's where the concern is.
Let's turn the page real fast to the Rams. Last
sure.
thing I have to say
yep.
is basically 2-2, they go into a bye week and they come out. What's their identity starting week five offensively?
Run the ball.
Run the damn ball. That's
yep.
who they're going to be. And you know what? That made a huge difference in the rest of that season. Everything came off the run. And because of that, and because the kid had thrown interceptions the year before, he was ultra conservative, and that's okay. It won you a Super Bowl. Okay. And did he start to rip the ball at the end of the year when teams got better in the playoffs and they're trying to shut Saquon down? Hell yeah, they did. And what I'm hoping and believing is that they're going to work towards that again. And all I know is that Sean McVay reminds me a lot of John Gruden, and he's going to sit up all night, every night this week. I don't know if he'll sleep. And he's going to scheme how to get Puka or Devontae on number eight. And that's what he's going to spend all week doing. And that's what he's unbelievable at. He really is.
What do you think's going to happen on Sunday?
You know what? I this is one I can't talk much about because I haven't seen their tape. I saw some of, you know, I know him from last year with a lot of tape, and I know Sean personally, and you know, I know how his mind works. He comes from the Gruden school and how they think. He's going to bring an offensive challenge to the Eagles. Okay, and Matthew Stafford is a completely different quarterback when you can smack him a couple times early in the game. When he's back there with impunity, it's like Jared Goff the other night. You know, he's just going to rip it all over the place. And then as far as defensively, their front is really good. It's one of the youngest, best front groups in the league. Back end is a little bit questionable, especially with Witherspoon going down. So, again, I think it gives the Eagles an opportunity, if they want, to try and get after the pass game early and try and get push the ball down the field, try and get some completions, try and get people to back out of the box a little bit, get a lead, and then run Saquon. For me, I would love to see that.
All right, Mike. Well, I appreciate the back and forth. Always always informed, always great. We will look forward to talking to you next week, Mike.
Hope you guys have a great week.
All right, you too, Mike.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Will Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Here's the pitch. Swing and a drive down the right field line. It's hooking to the corner, and it's going to be gone. It just clears over the short wall in the right field corner, and Rafael Marchand has his moment. A three-run home run here in the top of the ninth inning. His second home run of the season. And the Phillies lead it 9-6.
It's the WIP Afternoon Show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz. Today's show is sponsored by Guided Door and Window. Buy a window or door, get the second and a half off with 18 months interest-free financing. Call Guided Door and Window at 877-GO-GUIDA or visit goguida.com. It is Wednesday at 3, which means we are joined by the one and only Larry Anderson, L.A. How are we feeling, man?
Doing good. How you doing? Feeling a little optimistic.
Dude. Yeah. What the hell is going on with this team, L.A.? I mean that in the best possible way.
I don't know, because I just found out what happened last night.
You and most of the Delaware Valley.
I'll say, yeah, you and me both.
Actually, last two nights, I stayed up. Christy and I stayed up. Actually, we're on another channel for a while, and she's like, we got to get that game back on. I'm like, I'm a little nervous. I don't know if I want to. She's like, I'm watching it. So she flips it over, and it just happened to be right at the start of the six-run inning.
What? Well, at least you guys were rewarded for staying up.
Yes. Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. I slept so good the last two nights after 2:30.
Oh. I mean, L.A., these two gave up after the fourth. After the he was getting no hit for five.
Well, Well, no, LA.
Yes. I said it.
No, well, he's right. Yeah, well, I can't lie. Yeah.
You know, get up early.
I thought that was a scheduled loss yesterday, man. I wasn't sure.
Yeah, we all thought, okay, they're hungover from the celebration. They're getting no hit. They're down 4-0. I said, you know what? I'm going to steal some sleep. And woke up. Your dog wanted to go out. He woke up at 5 a.m., looked, and 9-6, I thought I was looking at an old score. I figured it couldn't have been from last night. I think, you know, that game last night, we've had a few of these over the last week, is a good sort of metaphor for the rest of the season, in that we talked about how resilient they've been, you know, in the face of injury, in the face of, you know, the things not going well, and then they keep coming back. And we've had a few games in the last week, last night being maybe the best example of the fact that when they are left for dead in these games, they just don't feel that, and they keep coming. And that game last night, just an unbelievable result.
I mean, if you go back both games, the first night, Monday night, too.
Yeah.
To me, they got a lead. They gave it up. They got the lead back. They gave it up. It's like, oh, this is not going well, especially you're on the road with the Dodgers, a very good team. And you just think, like, oh, come on. We got to win one game out of this series. And then next thing you know, they won both the first two games. I'm at the point now, I don't care what happens. Well, I shouldn't say I don't care what happens tonight, because you want to keep fighting, and you know, you never know what Milwaukee's going to do, but they do have a pretty easy schedule.
Yeah.
The rest of the way. I don't see them losing any, you know, bunch of games. So, but they're hanging on to that second spot, and just, I think just for this team is just, when you think they're dead in the water, they come up with some Marchand. I mean, it was great, and I was pulling for him, but was I expecting him to hit a 3-run home run? No, I wasn't. I was like, maybe he can get one in a gap. That would be great, and get a run in, maybe two. Oh, it's just, I don't know. I'm so nervous watching them, but they're just coming through.
I said LA. I thought it showed a lot of mental fortitude, yeah, for them to. There being no hit through five innings, and I mean, had they lost that game, even if they didn't get no hit and they got a hit and a run or two there, I don't think any of us as fans would have been upset, outraged at the loss. It would have been sort of acceptable, but it wasn't acceptable to them, right? Like, they didn't want to lose the game. They believe they still can run down Milwaukee and have that number one seed. Is there something to, like, the winning being contagious and you having that momentum? It's almost like they have a newfound belief in themselves, like they're the best team and they should win every game.
That's exactly right, Ike. I couldn't agree with you more. That's, I mean, the confidence, they have the confidence. You know, we've seen the resiliency of this club throughout the year. I mean, how many times have we seen somebody no-hit them for five innings? I mean, that's happened more than a couple times. And then they figure something out, or whether they get to the bullpen or whatever it is, they figure something out. They just, I mentioned it in a post game, you know, before they left on this trip. I was like saying, I can't remember who we had on, but it was like, maybe it was Marsh, but I said it was like, you guys go out and teams go out thinking they're going to win a game. Most teams do. They go out and they think they're going to win a game. This team goes out knowing they're going to win the game. And I think that's a big difference. I go back to the experience in 93 when playing it. We went out, we knew we were going to win a game. And we didn't win 162 games, but we had that mentality. And you take that with you when you go out to every game, and especially at this time, you know, getting ready for the playoffs. These are like playoff games. They were for the Phils. They were for the Dodgers, too, because the Dodgers are still fighting for their life to hang on to that third seed. But they just, when you go out there and you have that mentality, it's tough to beat. It's because it's a never give up attitude that you just, you know, because you know you're going to win the game. Somehow, some way, you know you're going to win it. There's no guarantee that you are. But having that mindset changes everything. It just, I think other teams look at it and go, these guys are going to be fighting till the last out of the ninth inning, you know, and that's that. And to carry that into, you know, where we're at now, down the stretch and into the postseason, there's nothing better.
Yep.
Larry Anderson with us. L.A., you know, you're an expert on a lot of things. I feel like you will be a good person to ask this. We all saw the celebrations the night before. How do you get up for a game when you tie one on the night before? Is there a strategy?
Notice he said you're an expert in this field, too.
Look, I'm just saying expert on a lot of things. An elixir you can use? I mean, how do you do
that? Vitamins. Now it's espresso.
Yeah. So one other thing from last night that I thought was particularly impressive was we're talking about the offense, was that, you know, I said earlier in the show, you don't look at Christopher Sanchez's line last night and say, oh, there is a number one dominant pitcher who is a Cy Young contender, 7 innings, 4 runs. But when you watch it and you saw them hitting him hard in the first few innings, the fact that he pushed through, evened out, got him through 7 innings, I thought was a really impressive performance from Christopher Sanchez.
No doubt. And I think he made some mistakes. He'd love to have a couple pitches back. Because I was saying this earlier today, some buddies that if you make pitches to the Dodgers, you can get them out. Like anybody can, you can get anybody out if you make your pitches. But if you don't make your pitches, these guys, the Dodgers, they hit them out. It's like you make a bad pitch, you're going to pay. It's going to be a gapper or it's going to be out of the park. And, it's to be able to, for Sanchez to make a bad pitch or a couple bad pitches, give up some runs, but still stay in there and fighting and battling. That's what he does. That's what this whole team does. I mean, we've seen how many starters we've seen over in the past month and a half, 2 months, where they give up a lot early, and then all of a sudden they're pitching in the sixth inning, seventh inning. You know,
well, Lizardo had that start the other night where he left four and then went into the eighth.
Yep.
Yeah. And that's huge for a ball club. And it's got to be for these pitchers, whether it's a starter staying in a game or, you know, coming into the bullpen, bringing the bullpen in, is that, you know, if you keep the score where it's at, you keep within four, you got a real good chance of this team coming back and winning. And that's what they're doing. And I think the pitchers are well aware of that, too, that it's like, I can't quit. I'm not giving up. These guys, these hitters aren't giving up. They might do nothing much right now. But by the seventh, eighth, ninth inning, they're going to have some points on the board.
I think the other thing that can happen, too, is when you're winning, I think, you know, Topper has done the whole thing with the platoons in the outfield, is I think maybe everybody's just willing to sacrifice a little bit more to be a part of something like this. Even, you know, platooning is one thing. Even maybe taking a walk. When you don't want to get up there and walk, you want to hit a double in the gap, but you understand that it is bigger than just you and you hitting that baseball.
Yeah, and that's the winning attitude for a ball club. If winning ball clubs, you don't see a lot of selfishness. You see very little selfishness because that selfishness becomes like a cancer on a club. You can't, and you get to this point where, okay, like Cassie's not playing every day. He's used to playing every day. Kepler's playing more than he was. Guys getting put in positions, you know, and doing what they're doing. It's like they just, it's, I don't know what the word is. It's unselfish. And it's just, what you really find out with this club, you find out when they talk about, it's about winning. It's not about my personal stats. You see that with this club. You don't just hear it, but you see it. And they perform that way. And they've been performing that way for a while now.
Last thing, L.A., is Harrison Bader's done a great job as a player since he's been here, but since Trey has been injured, has been really good in the cleanup spot. When Trey comes back...
Leadoff spot.
Not cleanup, in leadoff spot, right? Yeah. When Trey comes back, is there any consideration to keeping Bader higher in the lineup? You know, we were talking about a Trey, Bader, Harper, Schwarber top four or something like that. It feels like Bader has put himself in a position to stay in that top half of the lineup.
You would think, but for me, whatever Rob Thompson does, I'm gonna agree with it because I just want to follow him to casino. That's all I want to do.
He's making all the right moves. It must feel good because
feels great.
Well, the process he goes through is always the same.
Same, yes.
Right,
yeah.
but when it works, you know, even when we've all been talking about this is it feels like it's the year. When not only does Marshawn hit that 3-run homer you don't expect, man, It didn't have an inch to spare. I mean, it's just, it's like the...
Been there.
Yeah. It's... All right. And that right. is that. Yep.
Well, yeah, he got just enough of it.
Yep. L.A., are they going to win the World Series?
I got to believe they are.
Yeah.
The
there we go.
Right now, I got to believe that all signs point to yes.
All no right.
Question. There we go.
Man,
yep.
I love it. I love it. It's been
Me
a good
too.
Year. I did not think, I just didn't think we were going to finish the season this way. The fact that they were the first big team in baseball to wrap up the division, and I know the goal is bigger than a division, but, you know, when this team walked out of Citi Field four games up, and if I had told you that in 12 days the division would be over, I certainly would not have believed you. So,
and that you didn't have Wheeler, and that you didn't have Turner, and that you
right.
didn't have Bohm,
right.
and
yeah.
everything else going on. And still, with somebody, everybody's doing something, somebody's doing a little extra every game to put them in a position where they're at. And it's great to watch.
It's not, I'm sorry, I just keep going on this. It's not just injuries. Losing Wheeler and Turner, there is a good argument to be made that they have been the two best, when they got hurt, the two best players on the team this year. You could make the argument that Trey Turner, given his improvement in the field, how good he's been at the plate, Wheeler was a Cy Young candidate.
They're, right.
Neither of them have been playing. You know, it really is unbelievable. Well,
huge losses.
Yes, yep. huge.
But you wouldn't know it.
Nope. All right, L.A. Well, thank you. This was a fun call. I like having these. Yeah. Maybe they can keep winning. You know, it would be nice. So
at least win on Tuesdays.
Yes.
So the Wednesday's calls are good.
Yes.
Right.
All right, L.A., we'll talk to you next week.
Appreciate
you
it, brother.
Take care.
There he is, yeah. Larry Anderson. He said they're going to win the World Series. He said it.
All right, let's talk to one of our favorites ever in Philadelphia sports. And, of course, he coached both the Eagles and the Rams, coached them both in a Super Bowl with Dick Vermeil, is of course in St. Louis, not in L.A. And the coach joins us every single Friday at this time on a Football Friday. We love talking some football with Dick Vermeil, who's brought to us by Independence Blue Cross, the region's strongest network of doctors and hospitals. It means you can choose where, when, and how you get the care you need. Independence Blue Cross. Learn more at IBX.com. Good morning, Coach.
Good morning, guys.
Well, we are fired up for this game, and it's been a robust week of conversation, Dick, as you know. A lot of different topics, one of which has been the tush push. Let's
right.
start there. So I can honestly tell you, I don't remember your answer over the last few years, if you're pro keeping it or think it should be gone. I'm one of the few around here that think it should be gone. Where do you come down? If you were on the competition committee, would you elect to vote to keep it or get rid of it?
I wouldn't vote against it. I said all along, I think I said anyway, that, you know, I'm really not a big fan of the play, but I wouldn't vote against it. You know, there's advantages to it. There's disadvantages. One of the disadvantages to the tush push that no one really mentions, it eliminates the ability for a surprise third and inches play or fourth and inches play. I can't tell you how many games over my career that third and inches play was a fake run and a big pass downfield, or a fourth and inches play that fake run, big pass downfield that won the game for us. So that's the only thing it really eliminates in terms of an offensive type football play. But, you know, it just doesn't look like a football play to me, but I wouldn't vote against it.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. So, Coach, let's talk about the Eagles' offense. It's obviously been a struggle so far. They're 2-0 anyway. How concerned are you with what they're doing offensively with their performance?
Well, I sort of look to the past. You know, last year we didn't start out real fast offensively either, then got going after the bye. But, you know, I would have concerns just like I would be if I were coaching, and I'm sure that they have the same concerns. They've got to do a better job than they're doing right now. You know, they're just not what they ought to be or not what they will end up being, in my opinion. I'm sort of surprised it's taking them that long to get going. You know, that the Cowboys – last week, you know, we played them, the Cowboys, and the Giants played last week. The Giants threw for 450 yards against them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, just compare what our team has done against similar opponents. I know they're better than that. I know they're better. We know mm-hmm. that Hurts is better than that. And I'm surprised that with the coordinator, who was within this game all along, is having trouble getting the ball downfield.
Coach,
I don't believe it's totally on purpose. You know.
Let's talk about that a little bit. With this week, we've got a matchup. When you're talking about these offenses, you talk about our matchup with Kevin Petullo's offense, where you don't have much motion, you don't have much complexity, and then across the way, you've got, you know, a wunderkind coach who's got an offense that motions guys out the, you know, all over in every direction, and it is a lot more complex. Which is preferable in your book? Which works better?
Well, I think what works best is what you coach on the field. I movement, disguise, distract, and disrupt with movements, cause a mistake, maybe eliminate a little physical edge that the defense has because you've gained some leverage with your movement and your shifting mechanics. But, you know, it's what you coach. You end up doing well what you coach. And the Rams have been a movement motion team and a shifting team, and they're going to continue to be. And right yeah. now, in studying their offense, like I did this week, in comparison to last year, they're better. They're a better football team right now than they finished the season last year.
Why is that?
Yeah. Our numbers right now compared to last year are not impressive, okay, in any categories. But like you say all along, he hasn't turned the ball over. He's thrown 75% complete and no touchdowns. We're the only offensive football that hasn't thrown a touchdown pass. But
yeah.
That leads you to believe sooner or later it's going to blossom.
Probably going to throw a touchdown pass eventually.
Yeah, probably will.
How hard is it for us to cover them when they're throwing the ball? I mean, Matthew Stafford throwing the ball to Davante Adams, and we know Puka Nacua is pretty good too. How tough is that going to be with the cornerbacks we have to work with?
Well, fortunately, we have Vic Fangio. The Rams cannot do anything he hasn't seen, okay? That's mm-hmm. all. His experience, and as well coached as the defense is, I don't think it'll be a big, big factor. You know, yes, we have some new people within the defensive scheme, but I don't think it'll be a big deal to them. I think they'll handle it well. Plus, our pass rush, you know, Matthew Stafford's been knocked around a little bit already, you know, and with our pass rush, especially now inside there with those tackles, I think we will give them some problems. They will have a tough time handling.
Dick Vermeil with us here. By the way, congratulations to the winner of the Eagles-Rams tickets. His name is Andrew from Cherry Hill, listening to our show. Andrew won those tickets, and we're so happy to give them away.
Courtesy of NovaCare Rehabilitation, the power of physical therapy.
You know, Dick, we're a couple of years into this Sirianni thing now, year five, and there's a lot I marvel at with him. I mean, I really admire him. I think he's a great coach. I think his attention to detail is excellent. I think the culture he fosters is excellent. But another aspect, and I'm curious if you too think he's well above average at this, I think he's a great game manager. I mean, there's a lot going on for those 3 hours and 20 minutes or 3 hours in an NFL game. And sometimes even the great coaches, things can spiral out of control on them. I think he's got a great ability to manage the game. Do you see it that way?
Well, when you look at his win and loss record, you have to say you're 100% correct. Oh, my God. You can't do much better job than he's done with his win loss record and Super Bowl wins, playoff wins. So you have to say you bet he's doing a great job.
How tough is that? I mean, you're talking to a coordinator, the other coordinator. You got someone in your ear saying when to challenge, when not. You're managing players who are happy. You're managing players who are frustrated. You're keeping your eye on the clock and your timeouts and the down and distance. How difficult is that?
It all depends on who you have in the box upstairs. You know, sometimes you put a guy up there that's really good at it, and you only give him that responsibility to concentrate on every factor that's going on in the time management scheme and when to and when not to, all these kinds of things. And he is a reinforcer to you down on the field. And many times, at least in my career, I've had a guy like Al Sunders, Mike Martz, those kind of guys in the box, and Dick Corey in Philadelphia here that lead you to a simple decision. It's not a complicated one because they're working on it all along through the game.
Coach, this week against the Rams, is there one thing you're looking for this Eagles team to improve upon? One thing, well, one area you're really hoping to see a boost?
Well, you know, to beat the Rams, you're going to have to include your best players. Those wide receivers got to make some plays.
Yeah, because that'd be great. Know that those people are going to make some plays. You're paying those guys a lot of money, and they will end up making some big plays. They've been doing it all along, especially last year in a World Championship team.
Yeah, that's right.
You got to get those guys involved, and I'm sure that they will.
Coach, let's get your prediction. The Eagles and Rams, week three matchup. It's a good one. What do you got?
Well, my computer says based on the last six games of last year and the first two of this year, the Eagles beat the Rams by 1 point.
Wow. Okay? Wow.
That's what it says. But if you took just the two games played, the Rams would win.
And why do you think that is?
Games played,
why is that?
Because offensively, you're going to have to score more points than we're scoring right now to beat them.
Wow. Okay. Well, that is something. Well, Coach, obviously great news, not with that prediction, but with the fact that Vermeil Wines is available in Pennsylvania and New Jersey. I'll remind everyone, delicious Vermeil Wines, which can be shipped directly to your home. I've got a bunch of Vermeil Wines. Love them. VermeilWines.com, the website, VermeilWines.com for Coach's entire wine selection. Coach, enjoy the game on Sunday. We look forward to talking to you next week.
All right, thank you, guys. Go
Thanks,
Eagles.
Coach.
All right, there you go. Go Birds. Birds. Eagles head coach. I was going to Eagles former head coach. Always an Eagle. Dick Vermeil.
Yes, it is a Fransky Friday in the Midday Show, sponsored by Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. Joining us now, the voice of the National League East champion Phillies, Scott Francie.
Scott,
how are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Pretty good. It seemed like we haven't talked to you in forever, Scott. So does this feeling ever get old for you?
It's been a week.
I know, but it just feels. I said it this morning.
Does the feeling of going on your show get old for me?
Well, the feeling of being in this position, winning the NL.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland you know, think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
No, honestly, it doesn't. I mean, if you're a broadcaster of a team, you're along for the ride, and you're going to see some good, you're going to see some bad, and I think every announcer will tell you if you're not taking it in and taking full advantage of these years when your franchise is good, then you're doing the wrong thing because. They don't happen all the time. I remember, you know, when I first got here, obviously my first year was 06 and then 07, 08, 09, 10, 11. And I remember during all that, Chris Wheeler used to say, hey guys, enjoy it. Cause it doesn't stay like this. It doesn't stay like this. And it doesn't, it's a cycle. So you try to make sure you maximize, the amount of fun you're having now when they're winning.
Scott, and it sounded like you guys were having fun the first couple nights there in L.A. Take us through the feeling in the park and for you calling the game, because those games, that felt like October baseball, and it's a matchup, as we've talked about the last few weeks, that we're probably going to see very soon or could see very soon early in the postseason, but the comeback in those games, the wins, the Harper home run, that game to clinch the division Monday really had an October feel.
Yeah, it really did. And, you know, it was one of those things where you had, if you didn't win it that night, you still had 11 more chances to win one game, right? But you want to win and get in and be able to celebrate after a win and to do it there and do it against a really good team and do it sort of in the fashion that it happened, you know, the way that game unfolded. It had every bit the October feel, without a doubt.
Scott, when I was watching the series, so the Phillies win the first two, and they win the season series for the Dodgers, and then they drop the last one, but they won the series. It was almost one of those where it's beauty in the eye of the beholder. It's how you want to look at the series. So, Scott, which one stood out more to you? That they won the series, that they scored 15 runs off the Dodgers' bullpen, or the other side of it was they didn't touch Ohtani, Snell, and Sheehan, who they're probably going to see in that series if they face each other in a couple weeks?
Yeah, I mean, and they didn't see Yamamoto, who they might see, you know. Tyler Glasnow, they might see. When healthy, the Dodgers, their pitching staff is really good, and they might get creative. They might do some different things with different guys. I don't know exactly how they're going to lay it out, obviously. But I do think that, you know, you can look at it both ways. I don't think the Dodger bullpen is as bad as they've shown, and I don't necessarily think their starters are as unhittable as they seemed this week. I mean, it's probably somewhere in the middle with the two. You know, it's three games. It's hard to, you know, say definitively what's going to happen a month from now, and if they meet for three or five games or seven games or whatever. So, I think the big thing for me is that the Phillies again show that they're a team that is not out of a game, and they're a team that while they might, you know, while a particular matchup might not be the best for them on a given night, they're still in the game, and they, you know, they're going to battle all the way through to the end. So that's all you can really ask for.
It is, and we're going to see it coming up in October because the Phillies are NL East champions and pretty likely to be the number two seed. They're three behind the Brewers now for the one, but they're pretty well up on the Dodgers for the two, so we're probably headed towards that. Scott, tonight, starting in Arizona, interesting pitching, the way the Phillies are kind of lining this up. We could talk through that and what it means for the postseason. Let's start with the Walker Buehler thing. He pitched last Friday, I thought was pretty decent, and now he's going to pitch tonight in a piggyback role behind Taijuan Walker. Scott, do you think this is kind of a, I don't know what you call it, a tryout or kind of
audition.
Looking for audition, perfect word,
audition
for maybe him being used out of the bullpen in the month of October?
To some extent, yeah. I mean, I think the number one thing about the move is lining up Sanchez on the right day. And then if, you know, you have obviously got six starters. So if you didn't, somebody's going to get backed up and not pitch for, you know, too long of a time. So I think more than anything, it's lining up the guys you figure are going to start for you in October, more to the days that they're, you know, going to be used. And then, I think Rob Thompson has told us, you know, we want to see what it looks like. You know, Walker Buehler, he's got strikeout stuff, and I think that plays up out of the bullpen. Now, the next time they do it, they're going to flip flop. You know, Buehler would start and Walker would relieve. But I do think there's some element of like, hey, let's see what this looks like out of the pen. Maybe we can use him in that role in October, because clearly he's been there. He's done that. He has experience. And why not try to, you know, lean on that experience if you can?
The other part, and you were referencing it there, is how the Phillies are trying to line up their rotation for the start of the postseason. So it's going to be Christopher Sanchez lined up for the game one. Do you think it's going to be Ranger game two, Lizardo for game three? How do you think they might deploy the next two guys behind Sanchez for the postseason?
Yeah, I really do think it's probably going to depend on variety of factors. Obviously, we're talking about a division series, not using the wild card series, right?
Right.
And I think who they play probably makes a big difference. You know, whether it's the, you know, if let's say the Mets or Dodgers, how you like the matchups, where you like those pitchers, whether it's at home or on the road, the experience of a guy. I mean, to me, you know, I don't know. It just sounds to me like I don't see how they don't start Nola one of those games. Now, I don't know what order it'd be in, but I just think that that's going to be the case. And then, you know, those other guys might, you know, now don't get me wrong. Rob Thompson has a lot of trust in Nola and he wants him to figure it out. And you might see this weekend, Nola goes a little longer than normal, but I don't think you're necessarily going to see that. You know, even if he's struggling, he might keep him in the game. I don't think you're necessarily going to see that in October. I think the hook will be quicker. The eyes will be, you know, a little tighter to watch what's going on and how he looks. I don't think it's just like, oh, Nola has carte blanche because he's got veteran status. He's still going to have to pitch well, or he's going to be, you know, pulled from the game, and they'll go to other options.
Scott Fransky with us here at a Fransky Friday. Scott, it sounds like Alec Bohm could be activated from the injured list pretty soon here, as soon as this weekend. Do you have a thought on where, when he's back and activated and in, he fits in the lineup? It feels like he wasn't hitting great before he went out. Maybe the shoulder was a big part of it. Bader has really, you know, come on here. Clearly, when Trey gets back, I would think he goes back to the one spot. Bader's somewhere in the middle. Do you think it's going to be Bohm more towards the bottom of the order when we get to October?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I still think he's somewhere in that, you know, 5 to 8 range. Some of that depends on lefty-righty matchup for the day and who else is around him, you know, whether it's, you know, if it's a left-handed pitcher, you know, you're going to have Castellanos and somebody in left, whether it's Wilson or Kemp, I don't know. If it's a, you know, right-hander on the mound, you're going to have Kepler and Marsh in there, so that factors in differently. I just think he'll still be in that range, you know, 5 to 8, somewhere in there, if I had to guess. But again, you know, let's see if the shoulder was really what was causing the issues for him the last week or so, you know, before he went on the injured list. Because he came off the IL, the original IL stay and looked pretty good. I think he hit in 10 straight or something like that, coming off the injured list, and then all of a sudden hit the skids again. So I think it's going to, you know, it's a good to see what he looks like over the last 9 games.
Scott, go ahead. You have one more thing to say?
No, I was just going to ask Scott, because we were sitting there talking, and I was just kind of curious. Do you think that Topper's managerial style has changed over the last couple of months? And that's why the team is in the position that it's in?
You mean in terms of, like, game management?
I
think in the sense that it's time to go. I mean, you know, he's given Nick Castellanos a lot of runway here. I think that's where the biggest change is, his willingness to have Castellanos take his seat. And And you know, go platoon and mix and match and things of that nature. I think it got to a point where, look, you know, he had every opportunity to try to swing his way out of it, which he's given him a lot of leeway to do that in recent years. But now it's, you know, it's different. It's time to, you know, sort of step on the gas and you know, see how many wins you can collect, and that requires, you know, maybe changing the lineup up on a more regular basis, which I think he's shown a willingness to do.
He has a lot, and it's worked out. Scott, let's end with this. You were on the call for the game this week where Shohei Ohtani started. He threw 5 no-hit innings, had a home run later in the game. Just a ridiculous player. There's some talk now that they may, and he's asked and told them he would maybe play the outfield in the postseason, so it could help them in terms of structuring the game and not taking a DH out. Scott, we were trying to workshop how that would even work. Like, could he go to the bullpen and warm up to pitch while they're batting if he's not up? I'm just thinking, like, if he's playing the outfield and they want him to pitch that night, how would that even look?
Yeah, I Dave Roberts, while he didn't dismiss it, I think he was a little dismissive of it when he talked about it. Because, again, I just don't see there's too much for them at stake in terms of his health long term and recovering from, you know, Tommy John and everything. I think they've been pretty strict in terms of their usage of him, and I would guess that it's going to remain that way. If I had to guess, see, the thing is, I don't quite understand what really the value would be there. I mean, unless you're talking about just using him once late in a game, you know, I don't know. I mean, why not just have him start?
Right.
I mean, you're not going to bring him in to face two hitters, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's never done that. He's going to come in and start the game. I think it was just more of a question that was asked of him, like, hey, would you be willing to you know, like a reporter asked, would you do this? And he says, yeah, I'll do whatever's asked of me. But from a practical standpoint, the way the rules work and we're switching out, losing the DH and all that, it just doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, well, it's going to be fun to watch them, probably against him, in a couple weeks here in the postseason. Scott, we'll be listening tonight and this weekend in Arizona as the Phillies try to lock up that two seed and maybe even go for the number one. Scott, thank you for hopping on, and we'll talk next week.
All right, sounds good, guys.
There you go. Scott Fransky, the voice of the Phillies there.
The best of interviews on Sports Radio 94 WIP.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.